The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
Episode 22 of The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories, recalls the 1970 season. The Kingdom went into the season as title holders, and one of the greatest All-Ireland final goals of all time ensured they kept the Sam Maguire. Throughout the programme, we'll reproduce excerpts from the Kerryman newspaper. Gary O'Sullivan's will be the voice you hear each time.
Part 1.
Kerry had regained the Sam Maguire in 1969, getting the better of Offaly in the decider by 10 points to 7. Now the challenge was whether the Kingdom could retain the trophy, something the county had not done since 1941. Preparations for 1970 were somewhat different to what we've become accustomed to in more recent times. Nowadays, there's a lot of focus on how the off-season can be used in order to get players ready for the forthcoming year. It was a much different philosophy 40 years ago. Then Kerry player Tom Prendergast details the kind of break he and his teammates had between seasons.
Well, there was always a big break in those years. When we finished the championship in September, really there was no more training by the team until about the following March, when we were all brought together again and, sort of try to be geared up for the championship ahead. But there was no, I'm not too sure even about, I think there used to be a few National League games maybe played after the All-Ireland series, maybe until the end of October, and then nothing happened again maybe until February or March. But Kerry never did a whole lot of training for the National League in those times, with the exception, of course, of the final. But there wouldn't be huge collective training. You wouldn't be able to do it anyway because you wouldn't have the brightness in the evenings. So really, we used to get down to serious business then in March to prepare for the championship again.
March 1970 saw Kerry embark on a world tour. They took in Australia, New Zealand and the US. DJ Crowley has fond memories of the trip.
We had a great tour. Met an awful lot of Irish people abroad, diasporas, is that what they call it today? Yeah. And we got huge receptions everywhere we went. The first place we stopped for a while was in Perth in Australia, and then we played all across Australia, Perth, Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide, and then we went on, we played in Auckland in New Zealand. We were a full month tour. Yeah, we came back then, we were around the world actually. Well, we got time off for the month, and the county board paid our salaries for that month, and we got £100 spending money. We didn't do too bad. Plus, we had a marvellous trip, marvellous togetherness and so on.
Seamus McGarrett and Mick Morris were the only members of the previous season's championship winning side unavailable for the 1970 opener with Limerick. McGarrett was a key member of the 69 winning side. A knee injury would curtail his involvement in 1970.
I got a cartilage operation in June of 1970, and that time, unfortunately, what they did is they took out the full cartilage, which was the wrong thing, because all my age group that took out the cartilage that time, they were suffering now with the knees, and now they just snip out the bit that's torn and go on. It's microsurgery, but it was a fairly big operation at that time, which put you out for 2 months. I got back in 6 weeks, but I think that was probably a bit too early. I got back playing because I wanted to try and make the team for the final.
For the game with Limerick, John O'Keefe and Donie O'Sullivan came into a side which would remain unchanged for the whole year. The Kerry team line-out against Limerick in 1970 was Johnny Cullity, Seamus Murphy, Paul O'Donoghue, Donny O'Sullivan, Tom Prendergast, John O'Keefe, Michael O'Shea, Mick O'Connell, DJ Crowley, Brendan Lynch, Pat Griffin, Eamon O'Donoghue, Mick Leeson, Liam Higgins and Mick O'Dwyer. Kerry's Munster Championship title defence got off to the smoothest of starts, with Limerick torn apart at Askeaton.
Within 4 minutes of the start, we knew that Kerry were safe. The opening blitz yielded a point a minute. Playing against the swirling breeze in the first half, Kerry led by 7 points to no score after only 10 minutes. Three quick Limerick points cut the deficit, and then Donie O'Sullivan got his hand to a stinging shot to save at the expense of a 50. Limerick got their goal, however, within a few minutes when Cregan hit an upright with the 21 yards free and the ball broke to the unmarked Pat Murphy, who crashed a left-footed shot to the roof of the Kerry net. This left only 2 points between the sides after 21 minutes. However, the suspense was short-lived as Kerry struck back immediately and the forwards tore the Limerick defence to shreds while bagging over 7 points in the remaining 9 minutes. Their last point, scored by Brendan Lynch, started with a free, which Mick O'Connell sent to Pat Griffin. Griffin parted to Lynch, who placed O'Dwyer. The latter shot for a point was blocked down to Gleeson, who passed the ball out to Lynch, and the latter kicked a lovely point from an angle.
Half-time arrived with Kerry leading by 10 points, 15-1-2. The second half saw Kerry press home their advantage.
2 minutes after the restart, Mick Gleeson joined his five forward colleagues on the scoring list when he fisted an Eamon O'Donoghue lob to the net just as the Limerick goalkeeper appeared to have the ball safely caught. Within minutes, Liam Higgins has added a point and Mick O'Dwyer hits the crossbar with a fierce drive for a goal. A penalty to Limerick, and they had difficulty in scoring from it as Johnny Colity saved Eamon Cregan's shot before Sean Burke rammed home the rebound. Kerry coasted with Mick Gleeson adding a second goal 2 minutes from the end when he grabbed a centre from Pat Griffin and crashed a fine shot to the net.
Kerry 2-19, Limerick 2-5 was the outcome. Cork were to be next up for the Kingdom with the Munster title at stake. The provincial decider proved to be as one-sided as the previous outing against Limerick. Kerry were phenomenal from the off, as the Irish Press newspaper reported.
Kerry strolled majestically to their 52nd Munster title with a scintillating display of attacking football. Cork attacked from the throw-in, and until Mick O'Dwyer pointed a free in the 7th minute, kept the favourites on the defence. A weak Cork kick-out followed O'Dwyer's point. The ball was caught by Pat Griffin, who placed Liam Higgins, before taking a return pass and careering through for a goal. O'Dwyer quickly added a point from play, but Bernie O'Neill replied with a great solo effort for Cork. Almost immediately, another bad Cork clearance was intercepted by Brendan Lynch, who sent Pat Griffin through for a point. The kick-out was once again low and went to Lynch, who linked up with Pat Griffin, who in turn parted to Liam Higgins, whose shot gave Billy Morgan no chance and left Kerry ahead 2-3 to 1 point after 10 minutes.
Brendan Lynch says Higgins and Griffin were scintillating in the early exchanges.
Pat Griffin at centre forward and Liam at full forward was been a very effective axis. They had worked in understanding that Pat Griffin had a great burst of speed to take passes from Liam and got many good scores that way. And in Pat and Liam in the first 20 minutes, I think really tore Cork apart and we never looked back after that.
Kerry led 2-5 to a point after 15 minutes. In the space of 7 minutes from the 26th to the 33rd, Mick O'Connell shot 4 points. Only one from a free and only a great save by Morgan from Crowley kept Cork's arrears down. By the 36th minute, Kerry led by 2-12 to 2 points. Cork got 2 points back before the interval. In addition, they forced Johnny Colity to bring off a daring diving save from Donal Hunt.
The first half ended with Kerry leading by 14 points, 2-12 to 4 points. The destiny of the Munster Crown was decided by this stage. Cork fought valiantly in the second half, however. Two Dennis Colin goals helped them reduce the deficit to 2-14 to 2-7 by the three-quarter mark. The tie was never really in doubt, though. From there on, Kerry reasserted their superiority. 5 points by Mick O'Connell followed in the final quarter of an hour. Kerry won by 2-22 to 2-9. That 13-point demolition of Cork moved Kerry one step closer to defending their All-Ireland crown. Derry were to be the All-Ireland semi-final opponents. Despite past failures against Northern opposition, Kerry player Brendan Lynch felt there was not any added pressure on the team.
No, I don't think we carried any particular psychological baggage into that game. And Derry, I think, beat Kerry in 1958, but I don't think Kerry had any major hang-up about playing Derry that day.
What an encounter it turned out to be. The early signs looked ominous for Kerry. The Kingdom managed just one score in the first quarter of an hour. The Green and Gold also had to survive a major injury scare, as documented by the Irish Times.
The first dramatic incident of the match occurred in the 3rd minute when Mick O'Connell after delivering the ball, was charged by Seamus Lagan. The Kerry midfielder walked to the line with an injured right knee. A point from Tom Quinn gave Derry a lead of 5-1 after 13 minutes. But then, Mick O'Connell, having received some rapid treatment in the dugout, returned to the fray.
Brendan Lynch was fairly confident that O'Connell would be returning after seeing him going off.
I was close to the dugout where when he went off injured, and I think we all expected he looked as if he wanted to come back, and so I think we did expect that it wasn't going to end his involvement in the game. It was certainly a bit unusual to go off and come back on again, but I think we expected him to recover. He was, of course, supremely fit most of the time anyway.
O'Connell had been off the pitch for 13 minutes. How he was missed. Derry had dominated since the throw-in, but failed to make their superiority count on the scoreboard. Brendan Lynch pulled a point back for Kerry, who then trailed 5-2. The first Derry penalty of the afternoon followed, coming in the 21st minute. The Irish press told how
Paddy O'Donoghue fouled full forward Brian Davlin in the parallelogram as the ball dropped. Sean O'Connell stepped up to the spot kick and almost casually, it seemed, stroked it to the centre of the goal line, where Johnny Colletti grabbed the ball securely and quickly cleared it away.
A Liam Higgins point for Kerry meant there were only two between the sides. The half ended with the same gap at Derry 8 points, Kerry 6. Derry had the first point of the second period from a free to go 3 in front. Kerry replied with Mick O'Dwyer and Pat Griffin scores, putting the minimum between the teams. 8 minutes into the half, Derry were awarded their second spot kick. Sean O'Connell, who had missed the first half penalty, was dumped to the ground. Confusion reigned, as the Irish Times reported.
O'Connell was fouled while in possession, almost on the goal line. Here was the big chance to make amends. A goal at this stage might well have rattled Kerry. It certainly would have given a new impetus to Derry. By this time, the captain decided to delegate responsibility. After some moments of confusion, during which it appeared that a number of players were appealing to O'Connell to take the kick himself, Seamus Lagan charged in, and as someone described the event afterwards, threw his leg at the ball, sending with uncontrolled power 2 yards wide of the left upright.
Donny O'Sullivan is in no doubt that fortune was on Kerry's side that day against Derry.
Back in 1968, Down got a goal against Kerry, which was out, you know, wouldn't, you could... Even more, I don't want to call it a freak, but, you know, the break in the way. And that, in 1970, we got a lot of breaks, Kerry, particularly against Derry. I put it against Derry more than anybody else in the semi-final. Derry were the team, I think, that year that we were afraid of. And they were in the semi-final. And they missed 2 penalties, 1 in each half. And just 10 minutes after half-time, when they were up 2 points, they missed. If they had scored, I think, one of those, one goal, I doubt if we would have won it, even though we won it well in the end. But they were the breaking point.
A minute later, Kerry were level through a Mick O'Dwyer free. Another O'Dwyer point, again from a free, put the Kingdom in front, 10-9. Kerry then had to survive a goal scare, as the Irish Times detailed.
The Ulster side missed a golden chance of a goal in the 56th minute because Sean O'Connell held on to the ball too long. Seamus Murphy averted danger with a dashing interception and lofty clearance.
Derry faded away after that. Pat Griffin put over 2 points to help Kerry into a 14-9 lead. From there to the end, Kerry tagged on 9 more points. Derry's second and final point of the second half arrived 7 minutes from the end. Kerry won on a scoreline of 23-10. The Irish Times had little sympathy for Derry.
It would be quite misleading to suggest that the Ulster champions were the victims of bad luck. They fashioned most of their misfortunes. Yet the extent of the losers' pressure on the Kerry line is seen in the figures of the game, which record they kicked 15 wides and forced 4 50s. As well as that, Johnny Colletti was called upon to save several times. 2 of his best efforts were accomplished very late in the game when he stopped Raspers from McGuinness just under the crossbar.
The Irish press agreed that the least wasteful side deserved the victory.
Kerry got into yet another All-Ireland final because it is a truism of football, as of any team sport, that creation of chances is only half the work done and is worthless if not embellished with a rich translation into scores. Kerry were frequently defiantly unyielding to the point of being scornful of the opposition. But fundamentally, they won this semi-final because having made their opportunities, they were able to convert them into scores. Perhaps it was ominous that Derry paraded with a mascot in contravention of a Congress regulation laid down in the 1950s. There can be endless speculation as to what might have happened had Derry goaled either or both of those penalty kicks. But I feel they would not have dethroned the champions, for they were bereft of ideas in attack, had no variety in their approach work, and never had the quicksilver mobility or unified smartness of Kerry. The saved penalty kick and two late second half saves, both shots from Tom McGuinness, is sufficient tribute to the excellence of Johnny Colity in goal. Mick O'Connell was the master at midfield, and his delivery of the ball was superb to an attack in which Pat Griffin and Mick O'Dwyer were most dangerous.
The greatest day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles, brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 2.
Meath were the last barrier on the road to back-to-back All-Ireland titles. They had secured their place in the final with a 15 points to 11 defeat of Galway. In 1970, the 80-minute final was introduced. From 1970 to 74, finals were 80 minutes in duration in order to extend the game. In 1975, compromise was reached with 70 minutes. Kerry were pushed every inch of the way in one of the truly great All-Ireland finals. Before focusing on the game, the Kerry man received a little shock ahead of the throw-in.
The first surprise of the day came when Kerry emerged from the midfield dressing room. The first time in my memory they used that dressing room. Certainly the first time in Mick O'Dwyer's career.
Twice in the opening 13 minutes, Kerry went ahead. Each time, Meath drew level.
It was Kerry who drew first blood when Mick O'Dwyer tapped over a free after Brendan Lynch had been fouled. Meath were quickly on terms when Pat Reynolds was fouled going through and Mick Fay slipped over the equaliser from the resultant free. They were level again at 2 points each after 12 minutes.
In the 14th minute, Vincent Lynch put Meath ahead for the one and only time that afternoon. 90 seconds after that, Eamon O'Donoghue had Kerry level. 1 minute later, the same player had an opportunity to put the Kingdom in front.
So the kick out now once again, it's 3 points apiece here in this 1970 All-Ireland final. Eamon O'Donoghue for Kerry, poking it up along the line. Liam Higgins has left his foot forward position. Back to Eamon O'Donoghue. There's a great chance here for the Benny Longford man. He's going through.
Oh, great save by McCormack. It was Eamon O'Donoghue got the ball to Liam Higgins. He lifted it to Liam Higgins. Liam Higgins got the ball up to McCormack. Like sold 1-2 dummies. O'Donoghue was running on it. Eamon O'Donoghue got right into the verge of the small square. He did a bullet of a shot. Sean McCormack, the lead goalkeeper, brought off an absolutely brilliant save. But great play there by O'Donoghue and Higgins.
The sides were level at 4 points apiece after 19 minutes. Mick O'Dwyer had Kerry ahead again, but only for 2 minutes. Meade's response was similar when Brendan Lynch pointed for Kerry. The game was tied at 6 points apiece, with 11 minutes remaining in the opening period. Kerry received a blow in the 33rd minute, with Donie O'Sullivan forced to retire through injury. His replacement was Seamus McGarrett, who himself had missed the entire campaign up to now due to injury. Kerry edged away from Meath with 2 points.
Now 6 points apiece here, all to play for. 30 minutes gone here in Croke Park. Meath on the attack again. 6 points to Meath. 6 points to Kerry. Barrett getting the ball here now for Meath. Plays it into the middle. This is a good run, but DJ Crowley putting in a great, great shoulder there. He's doing terrific work, coming back there. And Tom Prendergast now coming with the ball. Tom Prendergast with a fantastic run. Good high, knocking the ball inside. It's Liam Higgins. Was he pushed to the ground? He was indeed. He's causing trouble in full forward.
Meath was great working back by DJ Crowley, the man from Bradmore. He ran away back, got the ball, turned around, gave it out to Tom Prendergast. And what a great footballer Prendergast is. He's having a blinder, left the ball in. Higgins was fouled inside the verge of the square. And then Mick Dwyer came up and he just literally popped the ball over the bar. Kerry going to hit again, 7 points to six.
7 points to six. Certainly the high ball into Liam Higgins is working at the moment. And Mick O'Dwyer tipping that over. We're still in the first half here.
The big Cardinal inside, Gary's voice, and Liam Higgins inside here. The big Cardinal around the square, making a huge difference.
And coming him again with a kick out towards the middle of the field. It's a great catch. We follow O'Shea gathering this one. Left half back drives it inside again. And here's Pat Griffin. Mick Cleason with a kick. Brilliant block inside again. Fantastic defending by Meath. That could have been a goal for Paul.
Oh, that was a great opportunity for Kerry. Lovely play there by Pat Griffin. Wonderful play by the Dimble Glen Garman. And he turned around and passed the ball into Mick Cleason. And Mick Cleason hit an absolutely rocket of a shot. And between Sean McCormack and the two defenders, got their hands around and cleared the ball. Which was also great work by Bihar O'Shea out the field. The great man intercepted the great pass there. And Gary, this 50 metre field line,
Brennan halved the deficit, but Mick O'Dwyer restored the two-point advantage 2 minutes before the break. The Kerry goal then had a lucky escape.
Now Bertie Cunningham clearing the ball out from the 21. Kerry are really, really trying to get this ball back, but it's Pete into the attack. Mick Fee getting the ball 40 yards out. High ball looking good in a histy crossbar inside. And the clearance very unlucky there from Mick Fee.
Yeah, but it was great work behind by Jack Quinn and Bertie Cunningham behind to get the ball out to Mick Fee. And he was away out the field, 40 yards out the field. Sending a big, long, high ball. It was dropping, dropping, dropping. Cunningham kept his eye on the ball.
Fay did put over for Meath, leaving the score at half-time, Kerry 9 points, Meath 8. A Pat Griffin point, 4 minutes into the second half, put Kerry 2 ahead. Meath once again replied in kind. The Leinster men were powerless, however, over the course of the next 5 minutes.
So Kerry leads here now by 1 point. The ball, Tony Brennan now gathers it. Joe Murphy going for it. And Seamus Murphy now clears the ball for Kerry. Nick O'Dwyer with a great run. Shrugs off one tackle. Nick O'Dwyer.
Oh, that's a superb point by the Wire. It all started behind when Seamus Murphy came out and cleared the ball away up the field. The Wire got the ball, ran on under the Q6 then, with the wrong two men, and flew way out the field. The man who won all Ireland middles in defence. Now he's winning them in attack, very, very rare, and flew way out the field, landed the ball over the bar. That's a wonderful kick, a superb point by the men from Waterville.
Kerry lead now by 2, 11-9, and the Meath kick out once again by Cunningham, out for the middle again. Mick O'Connell gathers the break for Kerry. Kerry doing well now at midfield. Long ball inside again. The referee's whistle is gone, and I think it's going to be a free out to Meath this time, Rishi, for a foul there by one of the Kerry forwards.
Yeah, Liam Higgins is a judge to have fouled that there. Mick O'Connell, beautiful style by O'Connell, got the ball and with the left legs and the ball into Higgins. Higgins pushed his man free out.
And this free is taken. Bit of pressure now, the Kerry half back line. And Tom Prendergast has it. It's half robbed from Prendergast, but he clears it. Mick Gleeson now gathers the ball, coming in from the sideline. Outside to Pat Griffin. Pat Griffin now making great inroads. Good run by Pat Griffin. Still Griffin with the kick. Into the hands of the goalkeeper. He'd be disappointed with that one, Rishi.
He will indeed. Pat Griffin's shot just went, just dropped shot there. He'd be very disappointed with that. But Tom, great work again by Tom Prendergast behind.
It's back again to Liam Higgins. Liam Higgins dropping it inside. Gathered by Mick Gleeson. Turning on the left, Mick Gleeson slipped as he kicked it, but it didn't make a difference. Great score by Mick Gleeson.
Oh, great score by the man from Spa, riding out a corner forward, and it was Liam Higgins, the Lisbon man, who sent the ball right across the goal. Mick Gleeson got the ball, sawed a couple of little dummies, and with the left leg, popped the ball over the bar. Great point by the Spa man.
And Kerry lead now by 12 points to 9. Great kick in the middle, and Leeds certainly not throwing in the towel. Vincent Lynch, Pat Kerrigan gets it now. Had the ball, lost it again, going through again. The referee waves advantage, gets inside John O'Keefe. Here's the chance for Leeds. Great block by Paul O'Donoghue. He flung himself on that kick. That's terrific defending by the Belly Longford man. Play continues on, and the referee is waving advantage. And a great block inside again. And Paul O'Donoghue, Dinjo Crowley wins the ball, but Paul O'Donoghue doing great work. Is she inside there?
Oh, that was great block there by Paul O'Donoghue. Wonderful block by him there. It looked like that Meath were through for the goal. Paul O'Donoghue came across, threw himself down on top of the ball and saved it. There's a long ways to go. This is an 80-minute final, the first time ever. Will the players be tired? Who will be the fittest? Jackie Lyon, he's been in good form, I can tell you, Gary, but 80 minutes is a long time.
It is indeed, 12-9 still. Vincent Lynch gets the ball for Meath, lopping it inside again. This is going to the right and wide, and that's a let-off for Kerry. It remains 12 points to 9.
Yes, indeed, a let-off for Kerry. John O'Keefe making his debut centre-back for Kerry today. Younger John O'Keefe playing very well.
This kick out now coming once again. Pat Cook Park looked down on the green turf and his kick out in. Over towards Mick O'Connell. Mick O'Connell struggling for it. Gets it back. Second attempt. Clears it inside. This Mick O'Dwyer got the ball, leaving the forward bet. Great hand pass inside. That's Eamon O'Donoghue steadying himself, looking for the post. And that's a beauty from Eamon O'Donoghue.
Oh, classic and Kerry point. Dwyer got the ball from O'Connell. O'Connell to Eamon O'Donoghue, and the blondy haired man from Barry Longford just turned around and with a beautiful right leg put the ball over the bar at the Canal Inn. 13 points to 9, the Kingdom lead.
Now this free taken by Meath once again. John O'Keefe does very well, the young man playing at centre half back, and clears it into the middle to Dinjo Crowley. He's on solo number 3. Inside to Pat Griffin. This is great work by Kerry. Back to Dinjo Crowley. Crowley going through.
Back-to-back points by Faye brought Kerry's lead down to 3, at 14 points to 11. The game was once more turned on its head.
So 17 minutes of the 40 gone here. Pat Griffin with that latest point, 15-11. Terry Kearns for Meath. Eamon O'Donoghue doing an awful lot of covering. Liam Higgins transfers it on. Mick O'Connell making the run. And in fact now, Mick O'Dwyer ends up with the ball. He's still 60 yards out from goal. Mick O'Dwyer with a very high one inside. Danger here. Gathered inside. It must be, surely it's a goal for Kerry. And it's scored by Mick Gleeson.
Oh, great goal by Mick Gleeson. The big long high ball came in from Mick O'Dwyer. The goalkeeper punched it out. Mick Gleeson, a little bopping around. And the Macross ball came in. And with the left leg, pulled the ball in the ground. He's kicking into the canal goal. Cracked the ball low into the corner of it. And Kerry lead 1-15 to the point with that goal by Gleeson.
Brendan Lynch believes Gleeson's goal was crucial.
I do. It was at a crucial stage in the second half where he pounced in a very opportunist way and finished off a ball that broke near the goal mouth, and it gave us breathing space, and we went on to establish a goodish lead after that.
The goal looked to have put paid to Meath as they now trailed 1-15 to 11 points. Meath added their 12th point before Kerry once again took control.
So Kerry still leading here now, and it is 1-15 to 12. It's Ollie Shanley who's really giving a lot of work over there to Eamon O'Donoghue. Kerry trying to get ball back. Vincent Foley has it for Meath. Clears it inside. It's great work. Paul O'Donoghue at full back. Solid. Plays it outside here to his right, and it's Brendan Lynch and Pat Reynolds having a right old battle for this one. Into Mick Gleeson again. Gleeson, the goal scorer, still doing very well, working his way in. Plays it back to Liam Higgins. Liam Higgins in plenty of time, putting it on the left and striking it between the posts. Liam Higgins with a great score for Kerry.
Oh, that's a great score by the Lisbonemen, and it was all made by Pat Griffin and also by Mick Gleeson of Spa. And Mick Gleeson got the ball, turned it on, pushed the ball into Liam Higgins, and Liam Higgins came flying through and banged the ball over the bar. He's out wrong in the middle of the field now, Higgins. He sees two hands up on his knees and he's leaning down, because after that long run I can see that he's winded.
16 now to 12 points. Looking good for Kerry for another All-Ireland title. But Meath looked as if they have maybe the towel thrown in at this stage. Poor enough kick out, it must be said. Bertie Cunningham didn't really connect to that one at all. It was a very poor kick out.
Oh, that was a very bad kick out, because the ball went right down along the field. That was a terrible kick out. And it was Mick Gleeson who was waiting for the ball, and Cunningham kicked the ball straight into Mick Gleeson's hands. And Gleeson was fouled as well.
And it's Mick O'Connell who did not even the ball. He just stroked it between the post and his sub kick.
Well, Gary, if you want to see class and you want to see style and you want to see something unusual, watch Mick O'Connell, the boy from Valencia, because he just came up, never went near the ball, and just came up, never even placed it, and popped it over the back of Mark Yanto. Wonderful point.
8 points was the margin, entering the closing 18 minutes. The point that sparked the Meath revival was a controversial one.
Ollie Shanley, yes, it's Gardaí versus Gardaí. Is Ollie Shanley's marking Mick Griffin. Now so, here comes Pat Griffin, trying to go for this one again. Beaten foot this time. Kerrigan is doing well for Meath in the 40. Plays it across to Mick Fain. Mick Fain trying to get into the corner forward. Seamus Murphy with it. Still Mick Fain, selling dummies left, right and centre. Mick Fain putting it on the left. It's looking good. Well, the umpire's gone for the white flag. Easy, hard to say whether it was a point or not.
Well, Gary, from where we are here, definitely looked at the ball with white. Mick Fain turns around and he scratches his head and he's smiling because he's saying to himself, I don't know, did that ball go over the bar? The umpires are looking at each other. They're having a bit of discussion now. I thought that ball was white, but great play by out the field earlier on by Tom Prendergast. He'd be my man in the match today. But Gary, I thought that ball was white.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 3.
Meath added 3 more points to close the gap to 4. 10 minutes from time, the Kerry goal was under attack once more.
Tom Prendergast trying hard to get the ball back for Kerry. So to Mick Gleeson. He's released out now. Now he's just going through this danger here inside for Terry Kearns. This must be surely. That's a penalty.
a Mick O'Connell point gave Kerry breathing space.
O'Connell kicked one of the most valuable points of his career 6 minutes from the end. Picking up a ball near the sideline 55 yards from the Meath goal, he kicked from the shadow of the Hogan stand, a high straight ball that was splitting the post from the moment it left his boot.
It was 118 to 17 points in favour of the Kingdom, 6 minutes from time. Still, Kerry could not shake their opponents off. Meath scored again and the Kerry lead was down to 3 points, 118 to 18. The game was hanging in the balance with 5 minutes left on the clock. 60 seconds later, the game was finally out of the reach of Meath.
So, one goal in it, 118 to 18 points, 5 minutes left here in Cork Park. John O'Keefe to Dinjor Crowley. Great run by the Rathbone.
Forty years later, Crowley has no problem recalling his wonder strike.
It was a kick out from Potter, I don't know, and I know this from watching it in video, not from memory. And John O'Keefe caught it at centre field, and I was running outside him, and he passed it to me, and went off in a solo run. And I used to be practicing this kick, pulling the ball back to my foot like Mick O'Connell always did when that was the natural kind of style he played. And I was trying to pull it back to my right foot and kick it around the full back into the left corner. It worked that day, but it never worked in training. Ever.
Tongue-in-cheek, Seamus McGarrett has a different slant on proceedings.
Because himself, he was practicing, himself and Christian were practicing this move in training for months beforehand. I never saw them practicing it. My memory of it was, I think he took a snapshot, probably went for a pint and ended up in the goal. It was a fantastic run, and by his standards, he had a very quiet game up to then. I think he might have lasted the full game if he hadn't scored that goal the same day. But that was a phenomenal run. So it was a, you know, it was only DJ could do that run because he had the strength. He was the strength of an ox, and when he got moving, it was very, very hard to stop him. And he had a great rasper with the left foot too.
That final and Crowley's goal has long since lived in the memory of renowned GAA correspondent Donald Keenan.
That would be one of the first, earliest memories I would have had. You know, even now, probably the memory is impaired. But, you know, you just feel this charge and the power. It was just sheer power of what he did. Was just one of the great memories.
Take a bow, Jackie Lyon, screamed the Kerryman headline. The knockers are silent now. A third All-Ireland final in as many seasons had produced a second championship victory for the Kingdom. This 219 to 18 points defeat of Meath meant Kerry retained the Sam Maguire, the county's first time doing so since 1941. Wheesie Fogarty holds this crop of players in high regard.
I remember distinctly Jackie Lyon took over trainer of the Kerry team, and I remember he saying to me before he took over in 1968, he was a Legion man, Jackie, he said to me, Kerry had won the All-Ireland in 1962, and from 1962 on, 63, 64, 65, 66 and 67, there were very bad years for Kerry. They were beaten in semi-finals and Munster finals and everything like that. And Jackie Lyon came in and he took over the team and he said to me, I'm going to make a good team out of this Kerry team. And I'm going to stay with them, he said, for 3 years. And then I'm going to go. And he came in and in 1968, his first year in charge, they went to the All-Ireland final and were unluckily beaten by Down. And then in 1969, he had them right and they won the All-Ireland. And in 1970, they won another All-Ireland and they won National Leagues. And then out of that then, 1970 then, I was very fortunate to be with the top team. We did a tour of the world. We circumnavigated the globe. We went to Bahrain, Bangkok, New Delhi, Shanghai. We went to Australia, New Zealand, Perth, and we went to the Hawaii and we went to the Fiji Islands, and it was all out of that team. So that Kerry team, that won the All-Ireland in 69 and 70, they were beaten in 1968, so to say, they were great stars, and you're spot on. There were wonderful footballers in that team, and of course, my great friend Liam Higgins, Lord to mercy him, who worked with Radio Kerry, was full forward in that team, and then Tom Prendergast played a wing back, cornerback in that team, and Tom Prendergast was was one of the smallest footballers ever to play with Kerry. Smallest ever. As a matter of fact, when we went to Australia in 1970, we played a big series of games and we played against the Australians. And Tom Prendergast, we played them with their own football out there even. And we beat them with their own football. And there were big headlines in one of the Australian newspapers and a photograph of Tom Prendergast. He was only 5'6". Tom Prendergast, and the headlines in the national papers was Prendergast, the greatest small man we ever saw. That's how today I taught him. So there was great Michal O'Shea was centre-back. He's with Radio Nogaltic to know. And you had Mick Dwyer, of course, and you had Eamon O'Donoghue, and you had Paul O'Donoghue, and you had Seamus Murphy, wonderful footballer. You had quality in goals. Yes, indeed, no doubt at all about it. It was a great team.
Victory over Meath gave John O'Keefe his first All-Ireland medal, emulating his father Frank, who was part of the victorious side of 1946. Jono's memories of the 1970 decider are few and far between.
Not a lot, really, except I was told to mark my man very closely, like, and I was so anxious about covering my man that's more or less what I did for the day. And I remember towards the end, all right, I think I set up DJ Crowley for his famous goal, like, so he can thank me for that pass. So you know, it was great to win it, and you know, I suppose after that, that team stayed together for a while more. But I suppose it was pretty obvious that a share of the players were aging, and you know, as it transpired, we did get to another final in 72, where we were beaten in a replay by Offaly.
Kerry may have lost in 72, but Jono's time would come once more. Having missed out on a starting spot in 62 and 69, Donny O'Sullivan went one better in 1970, captaining the kingdom to All-Ireland title number 22. O'Sullivan, though, says it isn't about the medals you pick up throughout your career.
I've kind of a personal thing about it, that if you're past the age of 40, you shouldn't be talking about medals. You know, that is all gone. It isn't so much what went with the game, winning anyhow. It isn't the medals. I think what went with them, and above all, I think the best thing, and I really sincerely mean this, is the friends that came, the genuine friends, playing with and against. And that's, you know, I think that's more important than the medals. But maybe you have to get a few medals in order to meet or to get more of them. And so many of them we played. In fact, in the past few weeks now, just as an example, I was up in County Derry, out near Toome, and we went down to see a game about him and Frank McGuigan. I'd met him in years. Frank, you know, he was younger than I am, but he went through tough times as well. He was one of the best players I've ever seen playing, you know, and he should have achieved way more.
Another All-Ireland, another homecoming, and Uaisí Fogarty believes the tradition that follows the capture of the Sam Maguire is vital to future generations.
Homecomings are a huge part of Kerry's success, would you believe? The homecomings in Kerry with the Sam Maguire Cup from the first one I saw in 53, and I've seen every one of them since, they're special. They have changed, all right, in various ways, but up until the 70s, the team came through Mallow, and they came into Killarney, and they came in by train. And what a lot of people want to know is that when the train is coming into Killarney, you can hear the bangers going off on the line. They put little minor bangers on the line, and you can hear the explosives going off in the track. But for every banger that goes off, it signifies a year that Kerry has won in All-Ireland. So if Kerry have won 21 All-Irelands, they have 21 bangers. And then the team come into the station, and of course the crowd go berserk, they go through the towns, Killarney and Tralee, and you have all the young people out, and they're being lifted up on the shoulders of their parents, and all, do you know how they're troubling them? They want to be up there, and they want to emulate the players. So if you like, it's a very serious occasion, because what's actually happening is you're actually looking at the handing down of tradition. That's what you're looking at. You have the players up in the lorry with the Sam Maguire Cup. You have all the young kids down below them, and the supporters, and the tradition of winning, the tradition of bringing home the cup, the tradition of greatness, the tradition of the history and the mystery and the secret of Kerry is being passed on to the people watching the players. So the homecomings are very, very special to Kerry. And then when the cup goes around to the schools in the following week, that's very vital for Kerry, because once again, the tradition of Kerry football is being passed around and is absolutely vital. Homecomings are so vital to Kerry that without them, I would say this, that Kerry wouldn't have won all the All-Irelands only for the homecomings.
You've been listening to The Greatest Day, a 36-part series documenting the story of Kerry's All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories. The Greatest Day was presented by John Drummy, written by Joe O'Mahony, and researched and produced by the Radio Kerry Sports team. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.
The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.